So, welcome to Friday.
Friday. I just got here.
You guys are so excited, I can tell.
Confused.
I'm in trouble. A lot of these things describe me.
A spendthrift.
What's a demagogue?
Demagogue.
Demagogue.
You pronounce it right.
I thought it was D-M-I-G-O-D.
Hmm?
Not demigod. What's a
demigod?
Demagogue. What is that?
I don't know. This has no relevance to the class. This list. What's this class about? What's the class about?
Romans.
Homeland Security. Sorry. I thought we were just spelled out random words.
It is February the 6th. What is this class about?
Romans.
No, Romans is the title of the class. What is the class about?
Paul's
argument. We want to understand, what is Paul trying to say? How does Paul go about saying it? Right? So we start the letter with a salutation. Is that part of Paul's argument?
No.
No. So how much weight should we give to knowing the salutation? A little bit. Right? Because it's part of the overall structure. Then we have the prayer and thanksgiving section, verses 8 through 15. How important that is that to Paul's argument?
Moderately,
right? Because there's information in that extended salutation, and there's information in the prayer and thanksgiving that help us understand what he wants to talk about in the argument. But the argument actually begins with the body of the letter, which begins in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, with the thesis statement. Making the thesis statement one of the most important elements, i.e., you can get more points in this class by knowing the thesis statement than any other piece of information that you might learn. All right? Because that is central to his argument. I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith, Jew and Gentile. In the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed. This proclamation, gospel word, okay, very important word, is a proclamation. Good news, right? Used frequently. Paul did not create this word out of nowhere. When a new emperor was proclaimed, the gospel went out through the Roman Empire. Good news, we have an emperor. And who is this person that Paul describes? Son of God.
Romans title.
Titles that are similar to the Roman emperor. This gospel is an alternative way of viewing reality in the ancient world. There is a different power at work. The power of God, not the power of the empire. The thesis statement is then followed by an antithesis. The antithesis is the opposite of what Paul wants to say. Right? The wrath of God is revealed. And some people like that idea so much, and they have such a poor view of who they are and what they're about, that they just focus in on that and say, Paul wants to tell us how bad we are. Paul writes us to tell us how bad we are. Is that why he writes this? No. He has a proclamation to talk about the thesis statement. The antithesis is the wrath of God is revealed. How do I know that the wrath of God is revealed? And he gives us an example, idolatry. People fail to acknowledge God. That's the problem. People fail to acknowledge God. I used an illustration of a child with a paperclip and an electrical socket. If that child acknowledges the parent and does what the parent wants, do they place the paperclip in the electric socket? No. But if that child fails to acknowledge the parent and continues to try to do things that the parent says you shouldn't do and attempts to do so until the parent simply says, go ahead. Do we have to say that the parent intentionally created this problem? No, they have tried and tried and tried and tried and tried, which is why the Old Testament is really important to understanding the New Testament. Because way back in Genesis chapter 12, there's a guy named Abram, not yet Abraham, Abram, who God says, leave the place where you are, go to the place I want, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was like 2,000 years before. So how long has this God acknowledging been going on? 2 days? 2 hours? 2 years? 2 centuries? 2 millennia. That's what the Old Testament gives you a context. That God has been trying to communicate to people for 2,000 years and they didn't get it. And what does he do? Because they fail to acknowledge God and they practice idolatry, what does he do? He hands them over. He hands them over. And he hands them over. And what is the consequence of idolatry, which is failing to acknowledge God? Impurity. Great, what's that? So, because he is doing diatribe, not dialogue, okay? It's not a conversation between two people. It is a diatribe. It is a form of rhetoric. He now says, oh, you want to know what impurity is? Let me give you an example. He talks about homosexuality, which is an example of impurity, which is the consequence of idolatry, which is the defining statement that his antithesis is true. And if his antithesis is true, the wrath of God is revealed. What's that say about his thesis? It's also true. And is homosexuality the only example of idolatry that he gives?
No.
Well, no, he gives a short vice list. And to show you that it's short, I give you Philo, who is not short. The ancient world was filled with these vice lists. Okay? Well, now we have the next question as we move to chapter 2. Is God really fair? Can God really say, go ahead, do what you want and get what you get? And so chapter 2 is all about the fairness of God. He's answering a question. Do you think he's heard this question before when he said, you know, people practice idolatry, the consequences of idolatry is impurity, and here's an example of impurity. Well, Paul, how could you say that? You don't have a right to say that. You think if anybody's ever raised that question to him in the 12 years he's been traveling around the Mediterranean talking to people? Well, probably. And so he understands how to construct his argument, and he moves from idolatry as an example to say God is really fair. So you have no excuse when you judge others. Some of you noticed that you had many of the items on the vice list. He is not ranking them and saying homosexuality is worse than disobeying your parents. He's saying impurity exists in lots of different forms. And if you have one of these examples, because you fail to acknowledge God, then you're as guilty as somebody who has one that you think is worse. See, we have a problem with that in a hermeneutical sense. Why? Because we have crimes that are misdemeanors, unimportant. A DUI. Not, doesn't matter, does it? If I get a DUI, driving under the influence, does that really matter? Is it, I didn't kill anybody? Because that's a felony. And we rank problems. And so when we read the Old Testament or the New Testament, Romans, what do? Because of our hermeneutic principle, we rank the problems. Does Paul rank these in order so that the first one is worse than the last one? No. Simply says, here, it exists. And since it exists and since it applies to you, you have no excuse when you judge other people. You can't judge people. Meaning also, I, Paul, can't judge people. So who can judge? So, imaginary interlocutor. I always like to give this because it shows how old I am, how young you are, and it reminds me that you have different perspectives on things. An interlocutor is one with whom you have dialogue. Locutor is a Latin term. There was a gentleman once who showed up on television who was named Lucetus of Borg. Huh. Does anyone know Lucetus of Borg? You're old. See, nobody else knows about this person.
Because you're not saying it in the way that the TV show said it.
How do they say it?
Locutus.
Locutus of Borg. Well, they wouldn't know anyway.
I knew he would.
No, right? There was a show called Star Trek Next Generation. The Borg came along, captured Captain Picard, the bald guy, and
Xavier.
Made him their spokesperson. And because we understand Latin so well, when Hollywood decided to give him a name, they gave him a Latin name, which means the one who speaks. Yeah, he's the one who spoke for them. He was this face who spoke for them. Locutus. All that example is so that you will know that I'm going to ask you a Star Trek Next Generation question on the test, correct?
Yes.
Wrong. Examples are not important. Examples are to help you remember the point, which is what? What does this mean? He has an imaginary interlocutor. In other words, he has to make one up because he's writing in the paper. He's not schizophrenic. He says, quote, you say. Which would make us think he's talking to the Romans. Has he been to Rome? No. So how can you know what the Romans say? He can't. So he's created this imaginary locutor who is standing over here. La-da-da-da. And Paul's, well, you say, and then he puts into their mouth these words. We know God's judgment is on those who do such things because it's in accordance with the truth. That's their words, right? Which leads us to a problem about biblical interpretation. This is totally off the point, but I don't want to say it right now anyway. Okay? There are people who think that everything that's in the New Testament must be obeyed because they're Paul's words. And so, in the book of Corinthians, it says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Because of that, there is a school in South Carolina that has a courtship room. If you're interested in dating, Joy Beth, you would schedule an appointment in the courtship room where you could go and sit next to your beau, but they would put a Bible in between you so you did not touch, because Paul says it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Paul actually say that? No. He is responding to some questions that the Corinthians asked him. They're the ones who said, Paul, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. And Paul says, huh? Where'd you come up with that? And he goes on to explain his answer to their question. Because people do not understand diatribe and classical rhetorical methods, they think, once again, get this out of the way, in a linear fashion. Point one, point two, point three, point four, five, six, seven, eight. And you cannot go to point eight unless you have 7, 6, 5, 4. You've read Paul, right? You've read through all of Romans 3 times. We read it in class. You read it at home, and if you didn't read it, you listened to it because somebody took the time to read it for you so you could just listen to it. And now you're reading 1, 2, and 3 again and again and again. And how does Paul write? In a linear fashion? No. He goes to forward and backwards and around in circles and brings all sorts of things back together. And so if I was to take this and say, God's judgment on those who do such things is in accordance with the truth, that could be a correct statement, but it's not Paul's words. Those are the words of the imaginary interlocutor whom he is placing in the argument so he can now make his point, which is, God is judge. God judges. So he says, do you imagine that when you judge those, you will escape the judgment of God? God is the judge. Don't you realize something? God is the judge. God is the judge. Can he judge? Well, it all depends on your world view. Paul's worldview is based on his reading of the Old Testament. The beginning of Old Testament is the book called Genesis. Some of you may have heard about Genesis. Some of you may have actually read it. It's not too hard to read. Leviticus, you stop reading because it kind of becomes confusing. Genesis says, in the beginning, God created the world. God created the world. If God created the world, can he do with it whatever he wants to? Example. It's not going to be on the test. Did any of you have Legos as a kid? Yeah. We just uncovered some Legos and my wife put them away for grandchildren. She just kind of, we got stuff in storage for grandchildren like we're ever going to have grandchildren, but you know. Got lots of Legos because they were popular and we had 3 boys and of course you have to get one for everybody. Right? So did you ever build anything and you follow the instructions and made a spaceship or whatever because Star Wars Legos were pretty cool? Oh, you built the Lego ship, right? So your brother could come in or sister could come in and tear it apart? Well, no. Why not? Because they didn't build it. Could you tear it apart and do whatever you wanted with the Legos? Well, certainly. Why? Because you created the Lego ship. And it was yours. And so the Old Testament tradition is God can judge because he created the world. Exegetically, in 58, nobody argues with that. Hermeneutically, today, are there people who would dispute that?
Yes.
Well, yes, of course. I'm not trying to tell you that what Paul's argument is works when you talk to everybody in the world today. It doesn't, because they don't have the same presupposition. Their presupposition is we're just accidentally here. And because we believe in this survival of the fittest, kind of, up to a point, we are the fittest. I am the fittest. And so nobody can tell me what to do. But humankind is full of history in which people have gone in and conquered other nations because they were stronger and more powerful, and they forced them, Ms. Hines, to do things. And people talk about the United States as this conqueror who is going in and forcing people to do things. You may not agree with that, but that's what people say. So, there are people today who will not agree with Paul's presupposition. And because they do not agree with Paul's presupposition that God created the world, they will disagree with point two that Paul presents that God is the judge. But in 58, exegetically speaking, nobody disagreed with that. We existed, the world existed because the gods created us. And you didn't find any dissent to that. There wasn't some random occurrence of DNA that somehow, they didn't even know about DNA. It's 2,000 years ago. But God can judge because he is the creator. And because he is the creator, he is the only valid judge. I'm not a valid judge. You're not a valid judge. They're not a valid judge. First person, second person, third person. Inclusive. God is the only valid judge because God created. So God can judge. And this is totally obvious to Paul. Because he doesn't take any time to explain it. So what can we assume since he doesn't take any time to argue the point?
People already know it.
Who's it also obvious to? The people in Rome. This is called an audience convention. Right? We talked about those. Things that the people in Rome will already know, and Paul doesn't have to take time to describe much. So he discusses God as this judge. And this judge knows you intimately, he knows you totally, he knows you absolutely, and he is totally, absolutely fair. Are judges in America fair?
No.
They're not? See, there's a problem. Because in America, we think about judges, and if a person hires the right attorney, finds some loophole in the law, or is just a well-known celebrity figure, the judge will be nice to them. Some of you may have actually had that experience because you grew up in a small town, you did something that was really not right, you actually got hauled into court, and the judge says, Billy, what were you thinking? And he slaps your wrist and goes out, and you know that everybody in the community knows what you did. If you grew up in a small town. If you grew up in a large city, nobody knows and nobody cares, and so the judge can't give you that because he can't count on the community to enforce your behavior. We don't think judges are fair. So we might disagree with Paul on this point because hermeneutically we're saying judges aren't fair today, so God could not be fair. But Paul's saying no. God is the only one who can judge, and he is totally, absolutely fair. And so if I'm going to explain Romans in two simple terms, God is one and God is... God is one and God is fair to the Jew and the Gentile. Very important. Because most people thought at that point in time, and some people still think to do, that God favors these Jews because they're more important than the other people. That's why reading the Old Testament is important. You have to go back to Genesis chapter 1. Who did God create? Everyone. Now, if we thought that God had created a special species of people called the Jew, and everyone else had just simply evolved out of some primordial mud, which if you do watch Star Trek The Next Generation, Q actually took them back in time to the point when those amino acids actually joined.
I remember that episode. Will you stop making me feel old?
I remember it too.
See, it's amazing what you can learn by watching television.
Thank you.
You can learn about primordial DNA evolvement.
From Q.
Right? And where was I going? Oh, yeah. If some were created by God and some weren't, then of course, God will be partial to the ones that he created, and who cares about the rest? Is that what Genesis says? God created some and the rest just kind of happened? And most people wouldn't read it that way. So God is fair. So he can judge. And so what he judges and decides to be true is pretty important. So who gets judgment? Okay, that's fun. Now we're getting to the good stuff. He will repay God according to each one's deeds. All right, this is great. Get out the cash register. They don't make that little ching-ching song anymore. That's cool. Ching-ching! Did you have a little cash register growing up? You missed out if you didn't have one of those fun toys. Okay? So, he pays every man. Everyone. According to their deeds. What they do is what they get. It's a nice thing to think about. What you do is what you get. To those who by patiently doing good, seek glory, honor, and immortality, he gives eternal life. Okay? So those who seek what is good and do these things, the result is eternal life. That's pretty good. That's God's judgment. But on the other side, for those who are self-seeking, don't obey the truth, obey wickedness. Another word for impurity. Impurity is the consequence of what? Idolatry. Idolatry demonstrates that the wrath of God has appeared. There will be wrath and fury. So if you're good enough to just do good things, God will reward you with eternal life. And if impurity is the part of life you have, then tough. You're going to get the consequences of impurity, which are not all that good. So, the term wickedness there, just a little point, because you should be paying attention to words like righteousness, justification, justify, because they all come from this word, dikaiosune, which I said, when I gave the lecture, you need to know that word. It should be something that jumps out at you. And when you see that, you should be writing down the verse references in shorthand, not O-N-E, spelling out each word just to have fun. Okay? So wickedness is adikia. A is the negative prefix, means the opposite of. The opposite of righteousness. So we have an agnostic. Gnostic is a Greek word, means one who knows. Agnostic, one who doesn't know. You have believers in God. You have atheists, those who don't believe in a God. Atheists know God. And you have agnostics who simply don't know. A is that primary prefix. In case you're taking some sort of language test, maybe that's a piece of information that will help. So, those who then have this wrath and fury he addresses, there will be anguish and distress for everyone who does evil. And he says, the Jew first, and also the Greek. But glory and honor and peace for everyone who does good, the Jew first, and also the Greek. So, who is subject to this judgment? Do the Jews get special treatment? Well, they get it first. But it's special both ways, right? If they're bad, they're the first to the line of the spanking line. If they're good, they're the first to the ice cream counter, right? But it doesn't mean they're the only ones who get it. Now, see, that's the hard part. See, in the first century, most of the Jews thought, we have it, and guess what? You don't. We get to have ice cream, and it doesn't matter because we're just so good. And you guys will never get ice cream because you can never be good. See, that was the mindset of Judaism in the first century. Can you now understand why some Jews didn't like Paul? He'd been going around the Mediterranean saying, you know what, Jews? If you do bad, God's going to spank you just like he's going to spank the Gentiles to do. Do you understand now why Paul writes to Rome hoping that perhaps they will know something about him by the time he gets there and not believe the rumors? See, they didn't like this very much. So, but what he has just done is a little thing which we will talk about frequently called chiasm. He talked about the good people, then he talked about the bad people, then he talked about the bad people, then he talked about the good people in reverse order. And there's a way of writing in Greek classical called chiasm, C-H-I-S-M, and you'll need to know it at some point, and I'll tell you when, okay? Which helps us understand what he's trying to get across. Now, a lot of people read this section of Romans and think, God, Paul just really wants to talk about how bad we are. He talks about who first? The good, and then the bad, and then the bad, and then the good. And if you understand chiasm, this particular pattern is accenting the first and last by emphasizing it and giving an antithesis. Is Paul talking about how God's going to come down and punish everybody? So no, God judges people. If you've done good things, guess what? You get good stuff. That's the message. And God is the judge, and you know what? He's going to be fair, Audrey. Because he's not going to come out and see that you made him chocolate chip cookies and they're 4-inch diameter, and you set out a cup of milk, and he's going to like you and leave you lots of presents. And when he goes to Annie's house, and she just has something from Sam's. It's a knockoff of an Oreo. It's not even a real Oreo, and it's not a double stuff Oreo, which of course is better than a regular Oreo. Just a knockoff, and the milk is like half water, kind of watery stuff, and so he's going to just leave her a lump of coal because she didn't like, you know, she did that. He's not partial. He's not going to judge you on the bribery that you set out. He's going to judge fairly. Good people get good things, the bad people get bad things, and that's all Paul wants to say. God judges fairly, good people get good things, bad people get bad things. So, and it's to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So why then, or how then, does God judge? Well, at this point, he has probably upset quite a few people of the Jewish descent. And so, he says, all who sinned apart from the law will perish apart from the law. So he's going to talk about the law. And who has the law? The Jews do. So he said, how is God going to judge? On the law. And they go, oh, good, because we know that, man. We got it. We got the law. We're good. He's really just setting them up, but that's still to come. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Yes and no. He says to the Jew first because for him, the Old Testament story is about God reaching out to a certain people group, and he's not going to deny that God reached out to them. He reached out to them first, but in doing so, he's also reaching to the other group as well, and that's what he's going to get. So it's partly because they have the law, but they partly have the law because God reached out to them, but then God reached out to them way before they had the law. But there is a chronological order that makes him say to the Jew first and also to the Gentile. It's chronological, not preferential. Okay? So they have the Torah, they have the law, they have the covenant, they have Abraham, they have Moses, they have the temple. They have everything. And yet Paul's statement is very, very simple. It is not those who hear the law who are righteous in God's sight. Having the law is not enough. Because I don't know about you, but sometimes I'm watching TV and I flip through the channels and there's some kind of infomercial on. And usually it has something to do about weight loss. And if I just will spend four payments of $39.95, they will send me something that'll help. And I just heard it. And all of a sudden, boom, by hearing it, I have six-pack abs. Sweet. I'm not quite certain why people only want six-pack abs, right? Because we don't buy beer in six-packs anymore. We buy it in 12-packs. So why don't we have 12-pack abs? I think that would be better than six-pack abs. Don't you? So 12-pack abs are better than six-pack abs. And then they came out with 24-packs. So if I could get 24-pack abs, that would be better.
About a keg.
Right? Well, that's what I have already. I don't need that. Okay? So, hearing the law is not enough. The Jews say, we have the law. That's good. He says, it is the doers who will be, and he uses a word here called justified. Justified is the verb form of dikaiosune. So what do you have to do in order to be made righteous? You have to do the law. And Jews go, all right, we're already halfway there. And then he goes to explain how it's the Gentiles who do the law. If God is really fair, then anyone who does the law will be justified. Okay, I'm a Jew. I could buy into that, right? So a Gentile who does the law can be justified. And he goes, oh, hold on now. They can't be justified because they're Gentiles. So his whole point now is, don't want to drop that. The Gentiles can't be justified if they keep the law. So can the Jews. Is God fair? Mm-hmm. Yes. If you keep the law, you will be declared righteous. That's his whole point. So, what deeds are they judged on? Good righteous deeds. So the law, is it good? Yeah, sure, it's good. He's going to talk about the law several times throughout the book, so we won't stop here to digress. So now we've decided God is fair, God can judge, God will judge fairly, and God judges on the basis of having the law, hearing the law, or doing the law. Not that that's important, is it? The basis of God's judgment, would that be any way important to anything? Yeah, it might be. He judges on the basis of doing the law. Okay, so do the Jews have an advantage? He's been talking to him, Paul's Jewish. Do the Jews have advantage?
They don't.
If you call yourself a Jew, and you rely on the law and all these things, so we have another time when he's having a discussion, do the Jews have an advantage? And he starts with the big if. Anybody heard about the big if? It's not a movie or anything like that. It's like when you're standing by a swimming pool and you see a girl in a bikini and say, if I were to ask you to marry me, would you? That's the big if. If this happened, would this happen? Ifs mean absolutely
nothing.
Nothing. And he has one big if starting right here. If you call yourself a Jew, you claim the Jewish heritage, you rely on the law, the Jews relied on the law, if you boast about your relationship to God, hey, we're the right people, oh yeah, let's have a good time. If this is who you are, and you know his will, and you know what's best, and you approve of what's excellent, and so much so that you are now a guide to the blind, a light to those in darkness, a corrector of the foolish, a teacher of children. I said this is a big if. if you do this, 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 and this, and you consider yourself this, 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 and this, which is really just quoting things that the Jews believed. These are things, this is how they describe themselves. We're a light to the blind. We're a light in the darkness. We're a guide to the blind. These are things that they describe themselves as. We're a teacher of children. We have knowledge and you don't. He's using their own language to set them up for the fall. Right? If you possess the embodiment of knowledge and truth, he says, won't you teach yourself? Do you follow the law? While you preach against stealing, do you steal? When you forbid adultery, do you commit adultery? You abhor idols. Why is he talking about idols? What's the implication of idols?
Idolatry.
Idols mean people fail to acknowledge God. Right here, he's jumped way back to 118 and following to remind you that he's not linear, he is circular. Idols mean people fail to acknowledge God. If you abhor idols, do you rob temples? If you boast in the law, do you dishonor God by keeping the law? All this to say, those who do the law are righteous before God, and those who don't aren't. Now the question is, do you keep the law? And the Jews would say, sure. And Paul would say, really? 100% of the law? 100% of the time? Because that's the standard. You cannot steal once and keep the law. The law says don't steal. At all, ever. If you steal once, you violate the law. Are you now a keeper of the law?
No.
Can you be justified by keeping the law?
No.
No. So he has set up a point where, yes, God will justify those who keep the law. And he's now just told the Jews, guess what? None of you keep the law. None of you are capable of keeping the law. So yes, God will justify on the basis of this. Problem is, nobody can do it. And the Jews are the ones he's addressing first because they're the ones who say, God already likes us. We already have an in. For as it is written, the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. What is that? That's a quotation from the Old Testament. What type of rhetoric has he just introduced? Midrash. Why did he introduce Midrash? Who's he talking to?
The Jews.
The Jews. He doesn't use Midrash when he's talking to the Gentile part of the Roman church. He does it when he's talking to the Jewish part. And they're going, Paul, stop a second. Now, why do you say that we don't keep the law? He says, hey, right here, Scripture says it. The name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. It's quite simple. Scripture says it, it must be true. Yeah, you're right. Oh, then that makes you right. See, they didn't like what Paul said. That's why they had him thrown out of town. That's why when he gets done writing this letter and goes to Corinth, I'm sorry, he leaves Corinth, he goes to Jerusalem, he goes to the temple. What happens? There's a riot. There's a bunch of Jews who know he likes to hang out with Gentiles who start beating him up. Now, why would they beat up a nice guy like Paul? Because he said some things that they really don't like. Really, they don't like it. And there are reasons for it. So, the failure of the Jews to obey blasphemes God's name. And now he's going to give an example, but we don't have time for the example. But he's going to prove his point by giving an example. We'll pick up here on Monday when we're done with this part of the lecture. We will go right into chapter 3, 21 through 31. So please make certain you bring your notes. Thank you.